Crusoe, welcome. Episode 102 of Podcast Peldroid, and the first of the post-Trumpian era. So I'll let off a little Ratcliffe and Marconi firework or something to celebrate.
I thought you were going to say you're going to let off a little Trump.
Well, I might do that as well. This session ale I'm drinking is a little fruity. How are you, gents? It's Leon and it's Russell and it's Leon and it's Gaz. How are you, fellas?
All right. I'm just... has he actually gone? I mean, he's not. He's still saying he's... He's staying put, isn't he? Until I see him dragged out of the White House, then, you know, maybe it's too soon.
He does have another, is it 76 days left of his tenure, his presidency, so, to serve. So I think there's still plenty of fun and games still to be played. I suppose fitting then, we are playing the USA this week then. I'm not sure how much a football fan, Di Tango, to give him his new nickname, courtesy of Barry Horns. I don't know how much of a football fan he is.
Well, he drew a random round of the League Cup on St. Greavesy, didn't he, back in the 1980s sometime?
Yes.
So, you know, maybe he's never really left that behind,
yes,
I don't know.
Yes, he did. You're right.
Oh,
yeah,
God,
yeah.
That was... it was the Rumbelows Cup, wasn't it?
Yeah.
At the time. I think it might have been, like, early 90s or something. Totally bizarre.
For a certain generation, it still is the Rumbelows Cup.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been doing the round. That clip has been doing the rounds a bit, sort of in the run up to the election. I saw it a few times during the lockdown, and he draws something like Man United against Leeds United, and they have a big laugh about, like, you know, what a kind of big draw this is, and he doesn't seem to have a clue what's going on. He just sort of smiles along. So not a lot has changed.
Yeah, he was probably wondering which of those franchises were available to be picked up on the cheap.
yeah,
in which he could turn into, I don't know, the talkie Trumps, or I don't know. I'm trying to think of somebody else who begins with T in the Football League. So an eventful week geopolitically, but eventful in terms of Welsh football as well. I think the fairest and most courteous thing to do is to acknowledge that obviously Ryan Giggs isn't in charge for these three games coming up for valid reasons. It was a brief, succinct statement from the FAW. I think it said all it needed to say, and a lawn was drawn under it. I think I'm right in saying there's not going to be any, or very little, by way of sort of pre-match sort of press and conferences and things like that either. So, yeah, focus on on-field matters only. Let the due processes take their course, I think, is probably the best thing to do. But to acknowledge that Rob Page will be in charge for these games, assisted by Albert Stuyvesant, who Jose Mourinho, we talked last time to me about how he was aware of, you know, what was going on in the Wales squad and where Ben Davis had played and things like that. Obviously signed Roden, Bale's back there. He wasn't happy about Stuyvesant's involvement in the Wales squad as well. So he has taken quite a keen interest in us of late.
We were kind of chuffed, weren't we, a little bit last time about big name Premier League managers taking, you know, having kind of a working knowledge of the Welsh squad and taking interest in us. Now it seems like he's just causing trouble and interfering. You know, he wants us to manage Gareth Bale's minutes, and he doesn't like our Arsenal's assistant manager coaching us. Can't win.
Classic butter us up tactic, and then
should have known better with Mourinho.
We probably should have done. Yeah, it's I suppose it's you know, it is flattering to a certain extent. I had a degree of sympathy with him, but you know, at the end of the day, it's none of his business, and people are free to be employed by whoever they are, I suppose. I mean, there's a guy who's probably got any number of endorsements based on his recent kind of Insta brand. But so, yeah, so Stuyvesant is going to be assisting Rob Page. And I guess as well, I mean, I saw some references to how Page's under-21 record with us wasn't particularly great, with the exception of Flynn. I don't think anybody's ever has been particularly great for that, you know, or certainly not in the last sort of 30 years. But that doesn't kind of matter, because what they wanted out of this squad presumably had been agreed, you know, a couple of weeks ago at the very, very least. You know, injuries and fitness and availability obviously would have influenced the squad, but they'd have had a good idea of who they wanted to get into the squad and what they wanted to achieve with these three games and so on. They'd have done the scouting, all the rest of it. So, you know, Page is just overseeing a just overseeing a process here. He's not going to be wanting to put any particular stamp on this, is he?
I wouldn't have thought so. I think it's a situation that's been forced on us, and that he'll have to make the best of. You know, I presume he'll see it very much as sort of stepping in a role to kind of continue down whatever path has already been laid out over the previous games and the previous months and years. Yeah. So, yeah, I wouldn't expect to see anything surprising in selection or tactics. No.
I mean, I saw something interesting a while back. I forget where I read it, and I forget how far back it was. But it was basically, it was a sort of contrasting Giggs's less hands-on approach than Coleman used to take. And Giggs is a bit more, I mean, he's a bit quieter as an individual, obviously more a bit more kind of introverted, more reserved than Coleman, much more ebullient than he was, still is, but much more delegatory. And I guess, I'm not going to say he's not going to be missed, clearly, but there's that sense that he's not quite as hands-on as somebody like Coleman is. And so actually it is more of that overseeing role that Page has now just got to do. And maybe Page will be, you know, as hands-on as he usually is. So I'm not anticipating anything different. It'll just be a bit unusual not having him on the sidelines. So yeah, I mean, in terms of the squad, it was a slightly inflated squad, and I kind of read into it a couple of... Do you remember back in the day you used to get standby lists as well? I haven't had a standby list for a while, have we? I sensed there was maybe two or three names that ordinarily back in the day would have been on a standby list. So I thought Lawrence, for example, James Lawrence, was standby in case Cabango wasn't going to be fit, which has proved to be the case. But a couple of new names in there, obviously goalkeepers, a couple made a return. We've spoken a lot about them of late. You've done some research into Newport County, Gaz, for us. Do you want to show off your...
Well, it was only looking at sort of a couple of the new stories covering the squad anyway. So it was the first, I think it's the first time we've had two Newport players in the squad, isn't it, since 1983, a 1-1 draw with Brazil. So Nigel Vaughan and Steve Lowndes were the two players there. I think it was just after Newport had won promotion from the old Division 4 and they got to the European Cup Winners' Cup quarterfinals in about 81, I want to say. But those were two of the kind of core players from that era at Newport. They both moved on actually pretty soon after that Brazil game. I think Vaughan went to Cardiff City and Lowndes went to Millwall. But yeah, so what's that? 27 years? No longer. 37 years. 37 years.
Just while your history teacher, guys.
I know.
I was going to say they moved on to very quickly to, you know, to Botafogo and to Santos, but no, it was just at the M4. Yeah, they'd have been teammates of a certain John Lewis, who was my next door neighbour when I was a kid in Dennis Paris. He was at Cardiff, and then he went over to Newport, and he was actually player manager when they dropped out of the league, and they had all the financial problems. Yeah. Actually, so
I couldn't find any more detail as to when, but apparently Lowndes was then also physio for the Welsh team for 5 years.
Yeah, I've read that somewhere, yeah. Maybe that's where we've been going wrong most of the time against Brazil when we've played them recently. We haven't had enough Newport players in this side.
Well, got a draw, didn't we?
And I think famously, I mean, I think Shakey was on here once, this is about maybe 3 years ago, and I'm pretty sure that Shakey said that I think Socrates swapped his shirt with Lyndon Jones, got his only...
No,
is it a Flinney story?
No. I know this one. I don't think it was Shakey. I think it came from the One Cap Wonders one that we did a while back, which was perhaps the geekiest of the podcasts that we've done so far. It was...
That's a strong field as well, that.
Oh, shit. Yeah, true. It would have been... come to me. It was his only cap. He was Swansea. He was a defender. He came on as sub. And he just stood next to Socrates for the rest of the game. It was Dudley Lewis.
Yes.
Dudley Lewis.
Yes, sorry. Yeah. That's it. Who did I say? Oh, Lyndon Jones.
It's in Joey Jones's book, because Joey was, that was, I think, the only time he was captain, and Socrates was Brazil's captain. So Joey thought, as you know, captain to captain, I'll swap shirts with him. So Joey went over to get Socrates' shirt, but like Dudley Lewis had just been shadowing him for the 7 minutes or whatever it was that he was on the field, so he was too late. That's quite a memento.
Yeah, I think Joey did captain Wales against Canada in one of his last couple of caps. So there's a CONCACAF link where he's playing the US.
Yeah.
So we've spoken a lot about ex Newport players. It's Tom King, the goalkeeper. He's had a call up previously. It's young Josh Sheehan who got, I don't think there was any whispers that was coming anytime soon. And what surprised me, and I don't begrudge him for one second, a call up, but we've been rotating options in the middle, albeit Ramsey and Allen's unavailability has probably necessitated that to a certain extent. But I wasn't necessarily under the impression that we were, or I wasn't of the view that we needed to see any other options in midfield. But you know, he's going to presumably get a chance. Well, he's going to get a chance to impress in the camp. But given there's three games and we're going to need to manage the squad, he's probably got every chance of a little run out as well.
Yeah, I would say so.
Joe Morel being suspended for the Ireland game is probably a factor there as well. But sort of. Surprised that Will Volks didn't get a call up. He's been a bit in and out of Cardiff this season, but you know, they've had an okay start to the season, and he's won a few caps, and he seems to be, you know, sort of nice guy and popular around the squad and all that. So I'm sort of surprised that he's not involved at all. But it's nice to, you know, see another youngster come in. And Sheehan, he's had some injury problems, hasn't he? But he was highly rated when he was at Swansea as a kid, and yeah, good for him. And I'm sure he'll make his debut probably in the USA game.
Yeah, I think it's a really good story. You know, I think he probably having had a few loan spells. I think he went to Yeovil for a bit, didn't he? And at Newport, having left Swansea after a long injury, you know, that must have seemed like a very big drop down and a long way back to any kind of level that's going to put you on the fringes of the Welsh squad. But to overcome that injury, to be Newport's player of the year last year, he's ever present so far this season. It's nice to see that those players who maybe were young hopefuls, well, 3 or 4 years ago, and maybe have dropped away a bit, can sort of find their feet again in the lower leagues and kick on when it feels like they deserve it. I mean, on a slightly more cynical note, you could say it's another reflection of our lack of options in that part of the pitch. I mean, Will Volks, Leon talked about playing at a higher level at Cardiff, yes, but he's been pretty poor so far this season and has been involved in some of Cardiff's particularly weaker performances, I would say, watching it. And then we're talking about coming into a squad and competing for a place maybe in the team with people like Smith and Levitt. So scrabbling around, I guess, for options in the midfield amongst those sort of lower league players now at the moment in third, now even the fourth tier, which maybe tells us something about a bit of a lack of strength and depth in that particular position, but you know, gives players opportunities equally, I suppose.
I saw Sheehan a couple of times in the 21s and I was always really impressed with him. For me, he was almost probably the pick of the players whenever I saw the 21s. I thought at the time as well, he was still at Swansea at that time, and yeah, you know, like I think Swansea almost had like an arrangement with Yeovil, didn't they? There seemed to be, well, I think still is, you know, players back and forth there on loan, and notwithstanding those, he was still at the Swans, as I say, and he looked to me just to be another off that conveyor belt of deep lying midfielders, compact, quite short in stature, you know, looked a little bit lightweight, that low centre of gravity, tenacious, but neat and tidy, received the ball really efficiently, really tidily. And I just thought, well, here's another one. I mean, you know, we've seen Joe Allen come through. Leon Britton, I guess, you know, set the mould in that sort of player in that position at Swansea. You know, Mark Gower was sort of converted into that sort of role as well. And I remember thinking, you know, this lad might go somewhere. I think injuries have probably done for him, but Newport fans this week, they were all pretty much of a consensus. They were, one, surprised, but two, massively relieved that he was still at the club and absolutely convinced. And I think Mike Flynn was on a BBC website this week as well, saying the same thing. It's only a matter of time that he'll be until he's playing at a higher level. So, you know, all of that sounds promising. It's not necessarily a case of us scraping the barrel, but yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he goes.
I wonder if there's an element as well to which, perhaps in that position more than any other, perhaps centre half as well, that having players who've got some experience of toughing it out in regular league football, albeit at a lower level, are just a bit more equipped for, you know, what is a very big step up than perhaps if you've played a lot at under 23 level, or if you've gone out on loan and not really got games. So if you're looking at Smith and Levitt as options, and they've done okay, I guess, when they've come in, but maybe someone who's played a bit more football, who's, you know, had to tough it out in midfield battles in the second and third tier. Maybe they're just a little bit more physically and mentally is the right word, but certainly in terms of the experience of playing the game, you know, maybe that's a sort of another bit of the thinking to have that kind of option. I mean, even someone like Ampadu is a real youngster, was playing a few games here and there for Exeter, wasn't he? And Morel's had a good season or two now in the third tier. So maybe it's just starting to seem like players with that level of experience, albeit it's a long way off international football, are a better bet than the likes of Smith and Levitt, who have still very much got to prove themselves at any kind of first team level.
Yeah, and the 21s are talking, you know, the point I'm talking about is, you know, people like, you know, Wes Burns, Ryan Hedges were in the 21s at that point at Mepham. So some of those, you know, he's been part of that system, so he's not, you know, a complete bolter necessarily. Even he's obviously graduated from that age bracket now. I remember watching Wales train before the Euros, and Wes Burns, Tyler Roberts, Ethan Ampadu were in and around the squad, just, I suppose, getting used to it and part of that kind of succession planning, that Welsh way. Is there's still a legacy of that in place? And so I don't think he's, you know, he's not going to be turning up and not knowing anybody. So yeah.
No, and he in his interview, in fact, he talked about having been in one of those groups that ended up training with the first team, what, 5 or 6 years ago. But I think he said before the win over Iceland, I think that's 2014. So, you know, what's that, going back 6 years, he would have been, yeah, late teenager then, wouldn't he, 18, 19. So, you know, it's nice that he's found his way back onto that pathway, albeit with that big gap for his injury.
Someone else who's found his way back into the squad is Owen Vaughan Williams.
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected that, I guess, a year or so ago.
Don't imagine he would have, to be fair. I must confess, I didn't realise he was even back in Scotland playing.
Same.
Dunfermline, isn't it?
Yeah. More a bolter than Sheehan in some respects. Just the one cap, obviously. I think it was it the Netherlands friendly in the run-up, wasn't
it?
Yeah. I imagine he'd be bringing his brushes along and his acoustic guitar, because yeah, that was a big part of his brand in the squad under Coleman, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'd be surprised if he plays, but hopefully there'll be some tunes.
Maybe that's why Sheehan's been called up, because he's a massive Johnny Cash fan.
Well, they do have to sing a song, the new call-ups, don't they? So,
they do.
Yeah. So maybe Owen Vaughan Williams will accompany Josh Sheehan when he does his induction song.
Yeah, which could be the Ring of Fire, of course, given it has a sort of Wales connection. I think he's probably got a chance of a cap as well. I mean, Hennessy, has played every minute for quite some time under Giggs, certainly this season. So Ward is obviously going to start. If he has the same kind of pattern or approach to the goalkeepers this triple header as he did last, then, you know, he goes with the same keeper in each game. But I mean, the timing of Adam Davis's injury then for Stoke was shocking, because given that he came on, you know, in that last game, and you would have thought that he'd have been in the pole position to start, you've got to feel sorry for him a little bit. So Ward starts, but I wouldn't be surprised if we do see another look at one of the others, particularly if the Nations League maybe coming into that third game, it's all wrapped up.
I'd be a little bit surprised, I think. I think you're right what you say about the pattern of Hennessy playing all three games last time. I think Ward is our only keeper in that squad who, well, not playing, but is at a club at any kind of great level. King, remember, is on the bench for Newport. You know, he's not their first choice keeper. And Owen Vaughan Williams, I think, is maybe filling in a gap in the meantime. So I'd have thought Ward, especially given his lack of games elsewhere, will probably be playing all three, but you don't know. Interesting that the Maxwell seems to be not in the running now then. He had those one or two call-ups a while back, but he would be the one keeper I would notice who is playing some football still.
I mean, I'm always curious with these sort of things, to the extent to which someone like Tony Roberts then, he's the goalkeeping coach, but to what extent is he also scouting and having input into selection when it comes to keepers? I'd love to know a little bit more about that little kind of dynamic, if you like.
Has Tom King been playing for Newport this season?
No, he's on the bench. Second choice.
So second choice at Newport. And he gets a call up ahead of Maxwell, who's the regular keeper at Blackpool.
Yeah.
Just doesn't really make much sense to me. Maybe there's something going on we don't know about.
I mean, players have come into the squad. I mean, you know, Reece Norrington Davis, for example, last time. But if you look at players like Johnson, Levitt sort of this time last year, Smith to a certain extent. Well, Smith played out in when we played Mexico out in America. So players come into the squad. George Thomas was around at that point, if you remember. He does seem to want people to be in the squad for a while. And they might get a cap, they might get a run out early on. People like Brennan Johnson and Lovett, for example, have had to bide their time. But does want consistency of selection, it appears to me. Now, the rules that govern that for a goalkeeper's perspective to a midfielder, to a striker, might be slightly different, given the position, I don't know. But King was in the squad previously, so it appears to be, okay, let's go back to him because of that. So that's the only thing I can think of. When you put it the way you just did, Leon, Maxwell's omission seems a bit strange, because he has had, obviously he has been in the squad previously. In fact, like I can remember he was the fourth keeper training with the pre-Euros squad, because some of the drills that they were doing were involving quick turnarounds of the keepers. They were swapping them, and so they needed four, they needed an even number. Maxwell was there then, I recall. So
yeah, it does seem strange. I mean, I know he's older now, he's 30-odd now, I think, but you know, he came through our age groups, doesn't he? Representing all those other levels. So he's obviously someone who's established as, you know, like you say, not just in 2016, prior to that, as someone who was he's born in Wales, Welsh eligible keeper. So, you know, it seems a strange one.
As someone who sort of watched Maxwell come through at Wrexham and rated him and watched him a few times for the under-21s as well, I'm just sort of, looks like he probably never win a senior cap, and I just sort of feel a bit for him because I think it would mean a lot to him. He's quite patriotic. I remember him like belting out the anthem when Wrexham won the FA Trophy back in 2013. I think he was the only Welsh player in the Wrexham team then. Just feel a little bit disappointed for him, really. But yeah, it's not something that we should discuss for too long, really.
Tom Yockey returned. Joe Roden is in there as well. Epperm. Defensively, it's fairly solid. Ben was sort of rested from the starting lineup today by Jose, so clearly, obviously, taking keen interest in our busy schedule as well. Haven't checked. Has Roden come on at all?
No, he was on the bench today.
Nico's in there, so that's all as we would expect. I noticed Ampadu's been listed again as a defender, which might be an insight into where he's going to be figuring.
I think the last triple header seemed to sort of suggest something we've speculated about before, that Ampadu's role in the squad is really not set, and it's certainly not set when we get to the point where we've got injuries and withdrawals and when personnel forces into sort of tactical changes. So I think as much as the last time, we're likely to see Ampadu play where the needs of the game and the rest of the 11 dictate, you know, which is not no bad thing, actually, because he's so accomplished in both positions that I think if the particular team we're playing against and the rest of the players we've got available mean that he needs to be utilised in one position or another, I think that's fine.
Yeah. We talked a lot about Johnny Williams and Harry Wilson last time for contrasting reasons, I suppose. Johnny still fits. This must be probably his best run of games since the Euros, maybe. How's Harry getting on at Cardiff then, guys, for any non-Cardiff listeners?
Yeah, he's got a lovely goal in our win over Barnsley the other day. I think the Bristol City game was a bit more of a disappointment, but he looks better than that level, even when he's maybe not playing as well and he maybe didn't affect the game quite as much against Bristol City. But he puts in dangerous balls. He picks up good positions. He was playing much more in a sort of number 10 role for us in the last game or two. I think he'd be fine. He's certainly match fit. Though nice to see that David Brooks played 90 and scored twice this weekend. If he could come into the team and be a bit more of a creative force for us, that would be amazing as well.
That's positive going into this international week, isn't it? That David Brooks is fit and scoring goals. And you know, with Ramsey missing, which is, you know, it's kind of something we've become somewhat used to over the past couple of years, we do at least have some options in that sort of number 10 role. If Wilson's been playing there for Cardiff, and then Brooks is fit again, scoring goals, and then Johnny Williams is fit, and amazingly he seems to be staying fit so far this season, and he had a fantastic game, scored his first goal in our last match. So there's plenty of options there to play in that role. Just on Ramsey, I mean, saw people saying, oh, you know, give gigs or whoever the manager is going to be going forward has got to develop a plan for Ramsey not being there, because we just can't rely on him being there anymore. And I just thought that's kind of what we've been doing over the past 2 years or so, really, because we've had to. He's only started 2 out of the last 20 or so games, something like that. Yeah, I mean, circumstances mean that, you know, we've sort of had to look at other options anyway, and we've not lost that many, so that's promising. But obviously, you know, huge Aaron Ramsey fan, and, you know, if he's fit, he comes straight back into the team, obviously, because we've all seen just what an impact he can make, like he did in the Hungary game, of course.
There's going to have to be, going forward, a bit more of a sort of mentality thing in it now, I think. We've talked loads, haven't we, about those games when we're missing Ramsey and or Bale, and then we just look so unlikely to create more than, you know, a couple of really good chances. And I think this triple header, with Ramsey definitely out, between Mourinho's kind of comments and the fact Bale's got ice on his ankle as he comes off today, I'd be surprised if we see a huge amount of Gareth Bale across the 3 games. So I think we need to start feeling like, in games where we've got Brooks, James, Wilson, some combination of those guys, maybe Johnny Williams as our attacking players, they should be good enough to be bringing about, you know, decent wins against average international teams. And that way, when Ramsey and Bale are available, that's great and it's brilliant, but we don't need to sort of go into games with this mentality that we can't create and we can't score goals against teams like Finland and like Ireland and like Bulgaria. So that'll be interesting to see how that goes over the next few games. I would have thought that probably the USA game, I don't know what the sort of thinking will be going into it, but I'd be surprised if we see many of the stronger players, given the need to manage players across 3 games. I would think maybe USA will see starts for Matondo, maybe even Tom Lawrence, perhaps Tyler Roberts, and we'll minimise the amount that our better quality players have to play at all, because I don't think we'll see Bale in both of the Nations League games, and therefore we certainly can't be relying on Brooks to play 3 games, for example. So I'd be surprised if we see very many of our first choice players against America.
If Bale was to play twice, he moves to outright fourth in the caps list. Twice in those 3. Yeah. And by way of goals, obviously he's top scorer with 33. Next highest, I think it's only 3.
Kiefer Moore and Harry Wilson, yeah.
And Tom Lawrence as well, when you don't have Ramsey's goals. So, yeah, it'd be nice to get, you know, some big performances off some of those players like Brooks. I mean, he's been out for so long, wanting to dominate games, not little flashes, not little flicks and nice little passages, really beginning to stamp his authority, or not just him, but, you know, their authority on the games. Daniel James, another one.
Young as they still are, I think that there's definitely a sense we need them to see themselves as some of the senior pros in the squad and in the team now. And I think that's kind of how I felt about Johnny Williams's goal and Johnny Williams's couple of performances in the last triple header. He took us by the scruff of the neck and made something happen. Well, that's what we need players of the quality of Wilson and Brooks and Daniel James to be doing for us on a fairly regular basis.
Particularly when you see someone like Nico Williams, when he's come on, you know, he's stamping his authority on it. He's an assertive player, really positive. And he's only 19, five caps, you know, over this last couple of months. You know, as good as Conor Roberts has been, and he's having a good season as well, according to Swans fans, getting Nico Williams on the ball high up the pitch, and I don't think it's a question of, you know, is he going to be our wing back or our right back instead of Roberts or whatever? I think actually it's a question of, he's an out-and-out winger. If we can get him on the ball with a decent press high up the pitch, certainly in their half, and if he can begin to cut in as well, he's got that quality on the ball. So let's see some of those other players start being as assertive and as dominant with the minutes they've got on the pitch as Williams has been. I think that's been one of the standout things for me about him, is that he's imposed himself on the game. I expect him to figure in each of these games now and probably start in probably at least 2 of them. I mean, I, you know, agree with what you're saying in terms of managing the squad, all being well, he'd probably start all of them. But
equally, I think, I don't disagree with anything that you've said there about Nico Williams, but equally we've got a little bit of a pattern of teenagers bursting onto the scene and having 2 or 3 really sort of standout performances, standout moments that have really made a difference for us. And then, you know, maybe as they get sort of, other teams become more aware of them perhaps, or then maybe the confidence of being new to things, I don't know. But if you think about Woodburn, Daniel James, some of those players, the impact they had very quickly, even going back to George Williams, and then that sort of settled down a little bit. I think it is incumbent, we've talked James, Brooks, Wilson, to show that we don't need to be relying on the latest teenager off the block to save us. They are now our established top players, and they've got to perform, and they've got to score some goals, and they've got to create some goals.
I agree, and I think that's the message that is deserving of being sort of emphasised to them and being pointed out to them as well.
Yes.
If they can't see it for themselves.
Yeah, I'm just looking at this, the USA squad. It's like really, really young. Only player in the 30s is Tim Ream, the Fulham defender. We've got 10 uncapped players in the squad. So it's going to be sort of quite an experimental one. There's a lot of uncapped players who are really young from like really big clubs. So I think they've just gone with a bunch of like youth team players, people at Barcelona and Borussia Dortmund who are uncapped. So I imagine the USA team is going to be sort of experimental from their perspective as well. So it'll probably be two quite experimental teams, and I can't imagine it's going to be a classic. But they have got, you know, two, I would say, real standout players in Pulisic of Chelsea, of course, and Weston McKennie, the Juventus midfielder who came on to replace Ramsey the other day, funnily enough, when he went off injured. So it's an interesting test, but I think that'll be quite a disjointed game, and probably in something like a 0-0 draw, or someone will sneak it 1-0. And then joy of joys, we've got the Republic of Ireland again.
I mean, the USA have got so CONCACAF has its own version of the Nations League, so they've got a semi-final coming up. They've only played one game this calendar year, which for a country like USA that is, you know, usually, you know, has, you know, 15, 16, 17 games a season and players with 130 and 40 odd caps probably seems strange. So it'll be their second game in pretty much almost to the week a calendar year. So not only are they coming in not having had much time together as a squad throughout the year, but like you said, with a lot of inexperience. So on paper, I thought, well, okay, maybe they're looking at this as just a, you know, glorified sort of trial match maybe. But they have got some important games coming up, and then it's a qualification campaign. So there's players here with an opportunity to impress and force their way into maybe the more established sort of American squad. So that, you know, there is something in it for them. Well, maybe I'm going to be maybe a bit more positive and say rather than it be a 0-0, maybe it can be like 4-4 or something. So at least it's kind of entertaining. But
I would say 0-0 is a bit more likely.
You're probably right. 4-0 would be nice. So we get the goals and keep the clean sheet. You know, we don't know a huge amount about them, I don't suppose. We've only played them once before. I think we touched on this last time. I was out in San Jose, lost 2-0. I posted a couple of links to a couple of blogs that I'd been researching a while back. Because this was obviously mooted for March, I think it was, as a friendly. The previous times that we've played CONCACAF Nations, the last one being Trinidad in Wrexham. So now we're taking this lot to Swansea. So we're playing Canada up at Wrexham. So there's always a nice opportunity to move the games around when the CONCACAF Nations come to town. But yeah, and then Ireland. So is that Trump's lot first, then Biden's lot straight after? Is that how it's fallen, based on what I've seen? Like, what I've seen today,
with the America game, I would guess this is some kind of COVID induced situation. But the American squad has only got one USA based player in it, and if you look at the, so you know how Wikipedia does that recent call ups thing, there's a ton of players who were in the squad for their last game in Costa Rica who are not in there. So I presume they've selected purely from players who are available in Europe, although there is a player from LA Galaxy, Johnny Cardoso from Internacional.
Johnny Cardoso, so it doesn't is an amazing name, by the way.
Isn't it?
One of the baddies in Karate Kid? Or
If he wasn't, he should have been.
There's also a Ulysses, I noticed.
But even when you look at those players who aren't in there, you know, lots of players who would be based in MLS, it's not, maybe it's a sign of my sort of relative lack of knowledge of the world game at the minute, but I think in years gone by, a USA squad would have had quite a few household names in it. Never global superstars as such, but players played across European leagues and players you were aware of from World Cups and tournaments gone by. There's not a lot of big names in there. We mentioned Pulisic, didn't we, and McKennie. So it'd be interesting to see what kind of level they're at the minute, given that they haven't played themselves a lot of international games for a long time now. They've also got Timothy Weah as one of their strikers, who's George Weah's son.
Yeah.
And isn't Claudio Reyna's boy in the squad?
Oh, Giovanni Reyna, like it. He's a Borussia Dortmund.
Yes.
I think
yes,
that's
yes,
him.
Yes.
Yeah, which makes me feel really old now.
Yeah.
Their one American-based player is called Sebastian Kletget, double L. So maybe
it's
he
a double
play
L,
for
isn't
us.
It? Yeah. I think you're onto something in terms of the majority of them being European based. I think there's probably something going on there in terms of, well, if it's not COVID, it's certainly about minimising the travel and not disrupting the domestic setup or whatever they've got over there. So Australia have done the same in the past, haven't they? And I think New Zealand have done it a couple of times, just kind of basically have a camp and have a sort of home game in inverted commas on some sort of neutral territory. Yeah, there was not much to say about Ireland last time, having played them. I'm inclined to sort of say the same this time around. Again, we're sick of playing them, they're sick of playing us, I'm sure. Hopefully it's not going to be
I guess the only sort of interesting thing now really across the two Nations League games is the dynamic of Ireland first, then Finland. Because obviously Finland is the important one. We're head-to-head with them for promotion and out of that league. But if we were to drop points against Ireland and they were to beat Bulgaria, they're very much then in the driving seat against us. So I guess the selection of the team across the three games and certainly in the second and third game, we'll have to factor in, you know what, if we don't beat Ireland, we're likely to be putting ourselves under a lot of pressure for the Finland game.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to come down to the Finland game, isn't it? Because I think Finland will beat Bulgaria. Because they're better than Bulgaria. Bulgaria just don't seem to be able to score goals. And so it's probably going to be come down to the last game, really. Whatever happens in the Ireland game, that's going to be the decider. That's the big one. And it's the third of the three, really. So it's, sort of how the squad is managed in the lead up to that big game against Finland is going to be quite interesting. Maybe we won't see Bale until the Finland game, perhaps. I don't know. But
yeah. I was wondering about that. You'd think without Ramsey, and if there's the possibility then, say, that Bale's had an hour, 70 minutes against Ireland, it would be very much touch and go whether we see him then in the last game, if that's what had happened. So then we potentially are going into a Finland game where we've got to win. We've got to score without Ramsey, without Bale. And the recent games suggest maybe that's not something we can count on too strongly. So, you know, a positive result and a positive performance against Ireland could be really make or break.
Anything else to say on these?
Mepham's been playing this season for Bournemouth, hasn't he? Fairly regularly, so that's a positive thing. Well, I suppose it's interesting, you know, considering we played five at the back in the last game, will we carry on with that? Or go with the four at the back and, you know, Mepham and Roden? We could never kind of in any way figure out what Giggs was going to do, so I don't suppose there's any point trying to guess what a new manager is going to do.
It's become really hard to speculate about personnel in the back two, back three, and then in the midfield. The only thing I suppose we could look to is when players have been available previously, it did look like Roden and Mepham were becoming that first choice pairing in a back four. And with both of them available together again, I think we might see that given another go. And Morel being out for that Ireland game, I guess makes it more likely that Ampadu would be put into the midfield for that game. Again, with speculation, isn't it? It's very difficult to call at the minute.
Because look at combinations. I mean, I thought Mepham, he didn't start great. He had a very poor game against England, to be fair, as we said. No point sort of raking over those old coals. Redeemed himself a little bit, continued to be playing. So, yeah, but I suppose to a certain extent, it's a similar thing for him as it is for players we were talking about, you know, the more offensive players. It's about wanting a dominant performance from him and a really kind of assured, assertive performance. You know, even if the result doesn't go our way, but he can look like he can, you know, lead that line at the back. Because that was the player he looked in his first few caps. arguably since then, probably Roden is the player that looks like he's going to be that kind of rock at the back, if you like. I mean, you're going to have two even better. But yeah, he needs some better games than last time round for me.
Yeah, I think we're gonna need Mepham and a handful of other players maybe to step up at this time. We talked a lot about players in that sort of more attacking part of the team, but it's a great chance for someone like Mepham to again show that he's a senior player now who can be relied on to perform. He's been good enough to deserve that chance to prove it, I think.
Oh yeah. No, I agree. I think all games are on S4C. Are they on Dazn for you?
I guess so. I will have to check. I'm not sure about the USA one, to be honest. Tune into Fox Sports, find some sort of dodgy stream to that or something. Watch it on American TV. It's always fun. The American commentators are always fun. So sort of people get double teamed into touch and stuff like that. I'm sure I'll be able to find something.
So last thing, commiserations to the women. They played really, really well against Norway. Lost 1-0, so it's 2-1-0 defeats to them. And I think it means that their fortunes are now out of their hands, which is a shame. But I think it's still a playoff berth available. We did touch on it last time, but I couldn't quite get it edited in time before that game went out, which was a shame. But live to fight another day. But I mean, that Norway side, a really, really good side. And they pushed them hard, actually. I mean, probably, well, certainly deserved the draw and probably should have won. Which is encouraging. Yeah, so any under-21s are in action Friday, so after the USA game, and then the following Tuesday they got Moldova at home, and then, well, just the small task of Germany away.
Nice easy one.
Yeah. A massive task. Pretty sure they pumped us 5-1 at home. And in fact, actually, Moldova beat us away as well, so we started that campaign pretty well. We beat Belgium 1-0.
And then they pumped us 5-0 in the last game, I think, didn't they?
Yeah. It's always hard, though, isn't it? Because, you know, the number of, you know, we rattled off a couple of names today, you know, Matt Smith's another one, you know, players that are eligible still to be playing for the 21s. So Bowden's got a task on his hand, trying to raise a consistent team, given the numbers that are being promoted.
Yeah.
I mean, players like Nico Williams, I think, have jumped it altogether. So
is this the point where I jump in and say that Flynn had to deal with all this and still managed to beat the likes of France and Italy?
I'll whip the crosses in and you stick them away, Leon.
Christmas is coming, by the way. St. David's Press, signed copy still available.
Yes. Of Little, do you want to give it its name, just in case there's anyone who's still living,
living
in a cave?
Brian Flynn, Little Wonder by Leon Barton. Yeah. Some guy called Leon Barton.
Whatever became of him? What I thought we'd do, because we're recording this, this is Sunday evening, and I thought I would just give you a chance to, because I was going to give the little dig about how, because Newport have obviously had their game cancelled because of international call-ups, which Wrexham used to have, but I thought I won't say that. But you do get the chance instead this evening, so sorry to have dragged you away from it, a certain Mr. Reynolds and Mr. McElhenney.
I haven't been a member for a few years, so I'm not part of them. But you used to be a member, didn't you, as well?
Still am, yeah.
Are you? You should be at the Zoom meeting now, talking to...
Well, I should be, yeah. But I mean, you know, it's, you know, responsibilities, they pile up and you have to pick something. Dedication to the cause.
You could be talking to Hollywood superstars right now. And you'd be talking to us instead.
Well, yeah, but still superstars, but yeah.
I tell you what, Ryan Reynolds has never even heard of Nigel Vaughan and Steve Lowndes, so I think we all know where you'd rather be.
absolutely. But fearless in devotion, their Twitter feed tonight is well worth it, and by all accounts, they are, as I'm sure Hollywood stars are inclined to do, are really, really winning people over. What's your take on it? And Leon, as a Wrexham fan?
I'm excited, I've got to say. It's because there hasn't been much excitement for a good 15 years or so watching Wrexham, really. And I've seen one or two things where people saying, oh, you know, this is kind of ridiculous because people sort of, you know, on the sort of the left politically, who I would generally kind of have sympathy with, saying, you know, Wrexham, it's a fan-owned club and they should stay that way, and this is just a bit ridiculous. Hollywood stars coming in, sort of taking over. But the people who are saying this sort of stuff who aren't Wrexham fans don't realise is that we've been like really bad for a really long time, playing really bad football in a really bad division. With like really bad players, it's just been so bad for so long, really, that something like this happening, you know, it's just woken everyone up a bit. And so yeah, I'm excited. I'm sure it'll go through as long as they don't say anything too stupid tonight during the Zoom meeting. I'm virtually certain it'll go through because people just want to feel some excitement again following Wrexham, because we used to get a bit of excitement. We used to regularly beat bigger teams in cup competitions, and it just hasn't been. It's just been nothing. It's just been nothingness for a while now. So I welcome it.
Yeah, I think there's some been noises. I don't know about tonight, but I know a few days ago there was assurances that, you know, colours weren't going to change
Yeah, I think
and
that's all
the race
important.
course looks secure and things like that. And I think they're making the right noises that you want. And dare I say that maybe Wrexham fans have been looking at, you know, the likes of Cardiff and other clubs. And not just in terms of the superstar takeovers, just more modest takeovers. I mean, clubs like, well, closer to home in North Wales, like Bangor and, you know, obviously then Chester over the border,
I think we'd
have had
looked
new
at,
owners come
yeah,
through.
I mean, just from like in the 90s, we were really the best club in Wales. I mean, the biggest club in Wales. And we've seen, you know, Cardiff and Swansea just go on these sort of adventures. Just sort of feeling a bit envious, really, and thinking we're quite fancy a piece of that. Particularly Swansea, I would say, because I remember seeing Wrexham play in Swansea, beating Z in leagues, and we were being, you know, much better than them. And that was only 20 years ago or so. And since then, they've played several seasons in Premier League Cup.
Well, yeah, as I'm sure it'll go through. I think they've also confirmed as well that there is plans to have a basically a documentary as well. So,
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, there'll be a media sort of angle to it all, sort of like a sort of, you know, yeah. That's fair enough, you know. Liverpool and Manchester City and Tottenham have done had films about them, so why not Wrexham?
Sunderland.
Of course, yeah, some.
Jealous much, Gaz, from a Cardiff perspective? I mean, I don't know. Who knows? Maybe Vincent Tanner's got, I don't know, maybe he's going to reveal Johnny Depp as a
Yeah, I mean, it's those sort of
If Vincent Tanner's going to unveil anybody from Hollywood, it's probably that's the sort of choice he'd make, isn't
Yeah. These investment adventures can have their ups and downs. I hope it's all good for Wrexham. You know, I don't get me wrong. I don't mind a season or two here and there in the Premier League, but it's not all roses the whole time.
I tell you what would be funny. I mean, the number of times you sort of said it's good to take games back to Wrexham, none of us ever assumed it was taking it back to a, you know, a 50,000-seater stadium that they're going to build, I'm sure. I think they can afford it. So, okay. So, yeah, watch your space. It's going to be fascinating. Gents, enjoy the games. Enjoy DAZN. Hope you can find a feed for the America game, or soccer ball game, or whatever they call it these days. Yeah, we'll catch up and chew the cud over how it goes. I think we've avoided all possible and slanderous
Yeah,
comments.
we're not going to have to pull together to pitch in for a lawyer
I
then.
think we I
So
think we're okay.
I think we've
Well, Rich
avoided
has
it.
got a new
Good,
book out,
good.
so, you know, we can maybe just dip into his royalties.
Award-winning book
Indeed.
as well. It won the Guardian Not for
It
Booker
did.
Prize. Fair play. Nice one,
Yeah, yeah,
Rich.
yeah, yeah. Which club is he going to be buying and sending on a journey up the leagues? I think it'll be probably Menai Bridge Juniors or something, I suppose. But anyway, until next time, take care of yourselves and see you the other side.
Yeah, no star.
Cheers. Ta-ra.